It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Rob Lewis, Austin Price, and Brent Hubbs, presented as always by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999, East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, windows, garage. You can contact Exterior Home Solutions today for a free estimate. Give them a call at 865-524-5888, or you can visit them online. That's at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a lot to get into today. We'll talk a little basketball. We'll talk some recruiting for the class of 2026, and then we'll take a look at Tennessee's offense roster-wise heading into the second semester. But again, let's start off with basketball, Rob Lewis, and a good rebound for Tennessee after the dreadful showing in Gainesville on Tuesday, going to Austin, picking up a four-point win, 74-70 over the Longhorns. And honestly, the story, Rob, for me was, you know, a couple of transfers, but not the ones that you would think, right? Not Chaz Lanier, not Igor Milicic. It was Okpara and what he did defensively, and of course, Dubar and what he did offensively in the second half.
Yeah, two big stepped up games for those guys, and especially Darlingstone. I mean, a guy that's, you know, had a really tough start to the season, stepped away from the team for a little while, and frankly, you know, never have known and what you're going to get from him. And a popular guy with his teammates, but just somebody who hadn't really found a niche yet, and you know, had shown some flashes here and there, but for him to show up like that with 12 points, 17 minutes, you know, and six rebounds in that atmosphere, you know, and a night when, you know, Chaz Lear didn't really have it, points were hard to come by, man, that was huge. And Felix, man, that's exactly what they need out of him. And, you know, not even necessarily the points production, I mean, they certainly will take that any night out, but the way he banged and battled in the second half, he had seven of those nine rebounds in the second half. I mean, he was really physical. I thought his, you know, late in the last three or four minutes, he had an offensive rebound and a dunk when in that last 5 minutes when Tennessee was really kind of taking control. That was huge. And I thought it was his best game by far, considering the, you know, the stakes. And same for Darlingstone, obviously, I mean, not even close for Darlingstone, you know, when you consider what he's done. But I just thought that you had to be really encouraged, if Tennessee's coaching staff, for what you got out of those two guys who have been, I wouldn't say they've been disappointments at all, not remotely, but have been wild cards, have been a little up and down, have a little been inconsistent, and both of them came through in a really big spot.
I love watching Darlingstone play. Like, I don't know what it – it's like watching, like – the 40-year-old down at the local gym. Like, he just, the way he plays, the way he moves, he shoots, stands out long in the 3-point line, shoots a lot of threes.
I don't see any 40-year-old still done that follow-up dunk to tie the game at 56 that he did the other night.
Correct. That's the one outlier. But I mean, just like how the rest of him move, it just kind of, he just kind of moves, and he does not have a conscience at all. He's not scared of the moment.
And I think would advise him to get a little bit of a conscience if he wants to keep playing 17 minutes a game.
I think that's the best thing going for him.
Rob, what was more impressive, the fact that Tennessee won on the road or the fact that they did not allow the Florida game to beat them twice?
I mean, I think both of them. I mean, I think that's kind of the same thing, because I think it's a lot harder to do, however, when you go on the – I mean, I think it's pretty easy – not easy, but by comparison, to bounce back when you come back home, you know, after a 30-point beatdown. I mean, I think that's – you know, if Tennessee came back home and beat Texas by 20 after what happened in Florida, I don't think any of us would have been surprised in the least. But to go on the road after that 30-point beatdown and go into another hostile environment, that I thought that was impressive, especially Hubbard on a night when – you know, they had to grind. I mean, it would have been one thing if they'd have come out and, you know, made 6-10 to start the game and, you know, it was flowing on offense. But no, that was tough from the start. And they really had to dig down. And so that's what I thought was impressive, because it was not easy at all. And, you know, if you come out in a, you know, bounce back type situation, the shots are falling early and you get the momentum going, then it can happen pretty easily for you. And it did not happen easy for Tennessee. And it'd be a much different feeling today if, you know, we're sitting here after a two-game, you know, losing streak and they're 1-2 in SEC play. I mean, nobody'd be talking about they're not going to make the NCAA tournament or whatever, but they'd be in a big hole, you know, 1 week into the season. And nearly were. I mean, Tennessee's down 60-58 with 4 minutes left Saturday night.
Yeah, that's a Texas team that, I mean – I won't say Tennessee played great defensively, but they were pretty doggone good defensively.
They were locked in, man.
They made a bunch of contested hard jump shots.
Trey Johnson, I did not know. I mean, I saw your numbers. I was not familiar with your game like that. Woo!
Yeah, it was impressive.
I was going to say, I mean, he's been good on the defensive end, and you mentioned it a moment ago, but I mean, it just felt like it was amplified the other night, Rob. Ogpar, three block shots, but not just the block shots. I mean, how he affected so many more shots, and you mentioned they made so many, you know, contested shots and everything, but around the rim, man, Aparo was he was really, really solid the other night.
Yeah, he was, and that was, you know, I'm not going to try to say Texas is a world beater or anything, but that was a desperate team. I think you need to take that into account, too, when you talk about Tennessee, you know, not letting the Florida game beat them. I mean, Texas was 0-2. They're playing at home. They are desperate not to start 0-3, you know, first go-round through the SEC. And, you know, factor that in, too, for added to the degree of difficulty, because Tennessee got their best shot for sure. And it was physical in the paint, and man, Opora showed up. I thought he battled. Man, if they can get that level from him out of, you know, an SEC play, I think that's huge. And, you know, the guy we're looking at right now, I mean, not being critical of Igor, he's been great, but I mean, he didn't have it Saturday night, was in foul trouble, just played 22 minutes. Even, you know, which made what Felix and Darnay Stone do even bigger.
Rob, do you like the small lineup that the kind of the four out one in play that, and I know Dubar is a bigger guy, but I mean they were much more perimeter oriented down the last 5 to 7 minutes of the game. Do you like kind of what Coach Barnes did there? Do you think that's something that can be a regular part of what they do in tight ball games?
Well, I think he was rolling with the moment. I mean, I think he's still kind of feeling things. You know, 9-man roster and let's, you know, I don't think he's had that much confidence in Darnay Stone like he did the other night. So I think it's intriguing. I mean, I think we've seen it, but we've seen it with Jamai out there in that four spot. And if D Stone's going to hit 3 3-pointers in a game, I love the sure, small ball look, because I mean, but he also, you know, he doesn't do everything at a super high level, man. Offensively, if he's hitting shots like that, whew, that's a different animal. And that's not, I don't know if Rick would do this because it would make you smarter, but you could play Milicic at the five and D Stone at the four against some teams. Now, you know, sometimes, I mean, I think you get busted up inside if you did that, but that's, you know, if D Stone's going to be a guy that Rick trusts and has confidence in, I mean, you open up some possibilities with your roster, your personnel.
Rob, what did you make of Rick Barnes' comment on Chaz Lanier about
how he's going to be on the bench? I mean, why not? I mean, it's absolutely true. I mean, it's, you know, some people might cringe a little bit, but that's 100% true. I mean, people on our message boards or in any kind of discussion, I mean, how much are we talking about NIL? I mean, that's, don't pretend like it's not true. I mean, and I didn't think what Coach Barnes said was over the top or anything. I mean, he would, you know, I mean, 10 years ago, I mean, so that's why you're on scholarship to make that shot. So, I mean, the sentiment's the same. I mean, it really is. I mean, the bottom line is that's his job. I mean, you could say whether he's getting paid to do it or not. That's his job on the team. But, I mean, the bigger thing was, you know, what kind of a statement 11 minutes into the second half that he did that, you know, to the leading scorer in the SEC. I think that's all you need to know about Tennessee's head coach. And I'm sure at halftime it had been a very strong point of emphasis that, hey, this is the play where I called you shoot it. I'm surprised Rick's head didn't explode actually when Chaz didn't pull up.
The people that cringed were people in Indianapolis who just are naive, and then the people that are just don't really know how the world is. And there's some. I mean, there are definitely some. I will say this: we joke about Darnay Stone, you know, not having a conscience. I mean, your best player has too much of a conscience.
Maybe, yes, he does.
Maybe them two need to get in a room and try to marry together a little bit.
But that's 100% true. I mean, and it's, you know, Rick jokes about it here and there, but I mean, he means it. And I think it's tough. I mean, Chaz is obviously a fantastic shooter and everything, but he's, you know, he's really unselfish. And I think sometimes if he's missed three in a row, I think, you know, his inclination is, man, I need to give somebody else a chance. Whereas the reality is you got a better chance of making that fourth one than anybody else does of making the first one.
Well, I mean, when the coach draws something up for you, it's it's not so that everybody gets a participation ribbon for getting enough shots. I mean,
he's not a suggestion.
Yeah, I mean, he's drawing that up for one thing and one thing only. I mean, he wants you to shoot the basketball, and that's a lesson learned for Chaz. As for the comments, it's only cringe for people who still haven't come to terms with the fact of what's going on. I mean, it's just one of those deals where you're living in the past where nobody talked about money, right? Because everything was being done under the table or whatever. I mean, the reality is this is the world we live in.
Yep.
These guys get a check the first of every month. I mean, they get a check. And I mean, it's just,
I mean, which goes back to, and we talked about this on the Nation Sunday night, Hubbard, like what's fair and what's foul to criticize kids now that they're getting paid. Because I mean, like, I think early in the year, especially with Nico, you know, it's kind of like, gosh, guys, like that's really harsh, you know. But like then it's like, you know, when you step back and look at it, like, you know, some of that's fair. I mean, like personal shots are not fair. But like, you know, if you want to say, hey, man, he's making a lot of money to play, you know, bad football or bad basketball or bad baseball, you know, I think that's fair. Because, I mean, like these kids are now getting paid to do it. And that's what their job is to do.
100%. Man, you know, I don't think any of us, I mean, we're in a unique position. I don't think any of us would be super hypercritical. I don't know, I'll speak for myself, of a Tennessee player just because you're around. But as an example, a week ago, you know, I took kind of a humorous shot at Jonas Adu after the Tennessee game. I wouldn't have done that 4 years ago. But I had no qualms about doing it a week ago because of the financial and bottom line.
Rob, what do you make about the turnovers? I think Tennessee turned it over 14 times in the first 13 minutes. Sorry, 10 times the first 13 minutes, 14 times the first 31 minutes. Of course, the Longhorns had, 20-some-odd points off turnovers. Yeah. So obviously, that's something Barnes was not pleased with.
Yeah, it was brutal. I mean, I'm going to call it an anomaly until it happens a bunch. I mean, Zakai, I think, had four of those. But Tennessee was averaging 11 coming into the game. That's not a minuscule number, but it's not a huge problem. And when Zakai is your primary ball handler, you know, I don't think that's going to be a problem. I'll be really surprised if that's a problem going down the road. And again, I thought one of the interesting things, Eric, you mentioned all those numbers. They only had one turnover in the last 10 minutes, yeah, which I think, you know, a sign to me that, hey, let's lock it down and take care of the basketball. I mean, I think they can do that. I'll be surprised if that's a huge problem going forward. But man, that was a sloppy aspect of that game Saturday night that allowed Texas to hang around.
Yeah, Georgia coming to town. Georgia, a couple big wins here of late. Give us a scout on the Bulldogs.
Man, Georgia got to be the surprise team in the SEC. I mean, they've both been home wins, but they knocked Kentucky off at home. Golly, who'd they get the other night? I'm blanking.
Oklahoma.
Who's 0-3? It's got to be, you know, the biggest surprise in the league the other way. But, yeah, I mean, Mike White, his team, they're tight. I mean, they're playing tough. I mean, I think that catching them in Knoxville, much different deal than catching them in Athens. But, man, Mike White sneakily has they've suddenly got a little bit of a home court advantage in this thing. If anybody's been seeing some of the highlights from down there. But I think a different animal on the road. I mean, again, no disrespect to them, but they are off to a really nice start. I would not have, you know, certainly exceeded my expectations, but I'll be surprised if Tennessee can't handle at home. But, man, they're not going to beat themselves, or at least – and, you know, not – you got one of the best freshmen in the league, Asa Newell, Blue Kane, Knoxville Ties. Everybody knows that one. But, you know, I would expect it to be a challenge. But, man, Tennessee is such a monster at home. I'll be surprised if they don't take care of business.
Rob, were you surprised at some of the road wins over the weekend that took place? I mean, the South Carolina-Auburn game was really close. But Kentucky winning at Mississippi State, I thought
that was a big-time win.
I mean, I'm not saying there's separation in this league because I think this league's going to beat each other up. But boy, there was some of the quote higher ranked teams or the quote better teams in this league did a really nice job picking up some road wins. I mean, that Kentucky win at Starkville feels like a win and a half on right now. So pretty impressive that you know a lot of these teams, Florida, Tennessee, Auburn, Kentucky, went on the road and won over the weekend.
Yeah, I was. You know, Alabama, of course, a little asterisk. Texas A&M didn't have Wade Taylor. But, yeah, I've been really impressed with Mississippi State, Chris Jans. They're tough. I mean, that's a tough team in Starkville. So I thought that was a really good win for Kentucky. Again, not taking anything away from Alabama, but that's a you know different animal when you're talking about not having Wade Taylor for the A&M. I thought Tennessee's win as tough as anything in Arkansas. I just don't think Arkansas is very good. I mean, I'm not trying to toss stones at Cal or anything. I just think they have a lot of talent. They're just not blended in right now. So I'm not stunned about their 0-3 start. And I think Florida is pretty good. I mean, not just because of what they did to Tennessee, but I think they are pretty solid. And man, Oklahoma, I mean, I never thought they were great, but to get out of the gate 0-3, that's a welcome to the SEC moves. How about Texas and Oklahoma both 0-3 in the SEC?
Yeah, this league going to beat up on each other a lot. It's going to be a physical, mental, and challenging for fan bases and for teams for the next 2 months, because nobody's rolling through this thing. I mean, you're not rolling there's not many nights you can roll the ball out there and say, hey, you're going to handle this one by double digits. You don't have to play great or whatever.
South Carolina's probably the worst team in the league, and you just had Auburn dead to rights.
Yeah.
So Tennessee is going to host Georgia at the Food City Center on Wednesday at 8 o'clock. That game will be televised on the SEC Network. And, of course, Rob and Grant will have everything covered for you right here at VolQuest.com. Another commit for the class of 2026 football-wise, the 8th for Tennessee, and that came in over the weekend. A big offensive tackle from Baylor down in Chattanooga, and that's Gabriel Senda. He made his commitments nationally known at the Navy All-American Bowl. Austin Price, what's Tennessee getting in Senda at the offensive tackle spot?
A mountain. I mean, first time I met this kid, I looked at him, it was just like a shadow. I mean, like, he is big. He is a big, big kid. I think his best football is still way ahead of him, Eric. I think he's just still figuring it out. And would be one that I would suspect would rise in the rankings over the course of the next year. Maybe not right away, but I think as he continues to develop, as he continues to get into a senior year, I think he continues to rise, but he is a big, big kid. And, again, a nice pipeline at Baylor, all of a sudden getting established. When you think about Joakim Dodson, Gabe Senda, obviously, they love the sophomore tailback there. And then of course they get Amari Jefferson back from Alabama. So, for all the talk that, that school's, not been helpful to Tennessee. I think it's, former Vol Eric Westmoreland there, for Coach Kimmery. They've become a nice little pipeline the last couple of classes, and more room to grow.
Austin, whenever you see a prospect that big at the prep level and he's on the offensive line, I immediately think feet. Feet. We see his tape right here. How would you evaluate his feet in terms of long-term projectability at tackle in this league?
Well, I think he's got to continue to get better. I mean, he's got some things that he does really, really well. I think, his feet and quickness can definitely improve. But, for a kid his size, he moves pretty well. You see him pulling right there. I think you just got to continue to work on his agility, work on his quickness, all things that I think he can improve. And you can't teach size, but you can teach those other things. And, I think he's got a lot of growing to do. But it also – I think you like where you're starting. You like your base that you're starting with.
Now that's the second offensive lineman for Tennessee, one interior in Brandon Anderson, one exterior in Gabe Senda. Where does Tennessee go now? Not just in 2026 recruiting. I know there's some junior days coming up, but maybe who's the next look at offensive tackle?
There's a number of different guys Tennessee's evaluating and looking at, Eric. And, I think the biggest thing is get some of those guys to campus, over the next, little bit, the kid up in the state of Virginia, his name is escaping me too. Matt's going to have Matt just had a story on him Sunday, on the site. He's one that Tennessee covets dearly.
Darius Gray.
Yeah, Darius Gray. There you go. And he's one that Tennessee covets dearly. Then there's a couple of kids in the state of Georgia that Tennessee likes as well. So, for Glenn Ellerby, for Josh Heupel, it's just about getting those kids to campus as often as you can. Got a couple of junior days coming up, you're right, the next two weekends, and then we'll kind of see where things go from there.
Austin, why do you think Tennessee's gotten out of the gate so fast with the 26 class? I mean, let's take
the ranking. We're normal, you're right.
I mean, let's take the ranking out of it. But they're sitting at 8 commitments right now. A couple offensive linemen, as Eric mentioned, you got your quarterback in place, already in the class. But why do you think Tennessee in this 26 class has gotten on the board, so to speak, or gotten out so fast?
I think kids have been willing to want to get in the boat, and – to get Tyreek King early, obviously to get Faison early, to get Snead early. All those were big, and then you start sprinkling these out-of-state kids in around it. And when you have a quarterback that early, it's easy to, really kind of get excited and go pretty hard. You have to remember now, Faison committed, about 6-7 months before George did in terms of where their class was, right? Like, George committed in what, February last year?
Yeah.
And he committed in what, July or August? I mean, so you're looking at, half a year where kids can look at it and go, he's really good. I want to go play with him. Hey, Faison just called me. He's trying to work on me. All those type of things. So, I mean, I think getting a quarterback in that early certainly helped.
So, Tennessee indeed off and running in the class of 2026. 8 commits. You've got, I don't want to say 6 on the offensive side, 2 on defense, 3rd in the nation, 1st in the SEC. Very early, but off to a great start, as Brent mentioned. And a couple of junior days coming up. First one coming up this Saturday. All right. What does Tennessee's roster look like, heading into this spring semester? We talk a lot about the transfer portal and departures and the 2 additions and all that, but we'll go under the hood a little bit on the offense side of the football when we come back right here on the VolQuest podcast.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go. It's game. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby!
Now this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
As always, a big thank you to our friends, our presenting sponsor, that is Exterior Home Solutions. That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They have been local. They have been trusted since 1999. Hey, guys, the month of January is moving along. We have the NFL playoffs happening right now. College basketball is in full swing, the NBA, and so much more. And you can have a whole lot of fun by playing some Prize Picks every single week. And Prize Picks, the largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform in North America, easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. What makes Prize Picks so cool is instead of battling thousands of other players, including many pros, sharks, you just pick more than or less than your 2-6 player projections and you watch the winnings roll in. At least 2, no more than 6. Okay, you're going to pick a sport, a player. Prize Picks is going to give you the projected line. All you're going to do is say, hey, are they going to do more than that or less than that? It's truly as simple as that. At least 2, no more than 6, and watch the winnings roll in. And if you go to pricepicks.com/VQ, and you put in that promo code VQ right now, you're going to get $50 guaranteed once you play $5 in lineup. That's not a bad deal at all. PricePicks.com/VQ, promo code VQ, a guaranteed $50 once you play $5 in lineup. All that and more. Win big today. Have fun doing it. Promo code VQ at PricePicks.com. Okay, so over the next 2, VolQuest podcasts, today and next week, we want to go offense, defense, and kind of look at the roster, these position rooms, and kind of the strengths, weaknesses, where it's got to get better, players that got to step up. And, if you look at each position room specifically, because Tennessee's only made 2 additions, they've lost a couple of players, you can make the case that, well, is this position room better or worse than it was in 2020, four? Yeah, a lot of them will seem, it's probably worse. But, Brent, kind of going position room by position room, how does Tennessee feel about the guys in the room right now? Like, you're going to – running back, for example. You're losing Dylan Sampson. Huge loss, okay? Right. But they like Peyton Lewis. They believe in DeShawn Bishop. They like the 2 incoming freshmen. They need to see somebody emerge. We'll see if they get another guy out of the portal. But, sure, you're losing Sampson, but you like what you have in that room.
Well, I mean, I think a couple of things here. One, no coach ever thinks he has enough depth. I don't care who you ask. Somebody can have 5 returning All-Americans on the offensive line, and they're going to tell you they don't have enough bodies, they don't have enough talent, they got to go get more. So I think you're going to find that if you talk to a coach, you're going to find that across the board with everything. I do think they like Peyton Lewis, if you're talking about that. I think there's nothing to dislike about DeShawn Bishop other than can he stay healthy. Here's the other thing too, Rob and all you guys, when you look at it, I mean, what's been the mainstay of Tennessee's offense? The gnashing of the teeth about the offense the last 2 years has been lack of explosive plays. It hasn't been running the football. There's been no question about this team being able to run the football. So I think that there's some some confidence in your running back room and your confidence in the ground game, even with all the changes that are coming, because schematically, regardless of who the people are, you've been able to run the football.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that part of it, you probably go into to the spring if you're a Tennessee fan or if you follow this team or your coach, going, well, you know what, we'll be able to run the football. Maybe not as great. It may not be all one guy like it was with Samson, but we're going to be able to run the football because you run for, you know, 2,500 yards or more basically every year Josh Heupel's been the head coach at Tennessee.
I don't have anything to add other than to say that's – I mean, I think that's one of the, you know, under-scrutinized or less publicized things about this offense is the numbers they put up on the ground game without, you know, superstars. I mean, Dylan Sampson obviously put up huge numbers, but Tennessee's been doing that for 3 years, you know, without having, you know, the SEC Offensive Player of the Year running back.
Four-year stretch of Tennessee rushing for over 2,500 yards, never been done in program history. Of course, Tennessee this past year, and second most in the modern era, most since 1951 at 2,900, whatever it was.
And not just talent back. I mean, other than Darnell, I mean, you're not talking about a lot of blue chip offensive, you know, NFL offensive linemen either.
Yeah. Yeah. This scheme allows you to run it. That's for sure. Look at tight end Austin and feel good about the tight end room. You know, Holden Saves is a fine player. He played a lot, but you bring back Miles Kitzelman, who is your clear cut guy. And everybody wants to see Ethan Davis play more. And he's got the highest ceiling in the room for sure. And he's going to play more this year. I think everybody feels good about the tight end room heading into spring.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you got the two early enrollees that will be here. You have Cole Harrison in year two. And they talk about Cole Harrison in a similar way that they did Miles Kitzelman, like, you know, liked him late in the process, got here, realized he's better than they realized, you know. And so, like, you know, what is he? I mean, everybody's going to go naturally move to Brame and Van Dorslayer. But, you know, I think Cole Harrison has done enough, you know, in practice to, you know, maybe, you know, push himself in there and, you know, for some playing time in year two. We'll see. Again, we'll see if those freshmen can get past him. But you're right. I mean, this is a room that, again, that it has some depth to it. And, you know, because of the young talent that you do have, you're going to have to figure out, like, which one you like and probably push them into some playing time situations because, as we all know, holding on to players that don't play is way more harder than it used to be. So, you know, I think for Alec Ablin, he's got some veterans. He got the guy that he loves the most, which is Miles Kitzelman, back for another year when, you know, 3 months ago they didn't think any chance of that happening. And, you know, that's a huge boost to the room. And you're right, Ethan Davis will get a lot more opportunities, has higher upside, just has to continue to develop and build off what he did this past year.
Of course, they want the ability to go 12 personnel, don't want to live in 12 personnel, but obviously this past year, you know, ran it quite a bit. They haven't been able to do that as much as they want to in years prior because they only had two tight ends they played. They didn't have confidence in that third tight end that's needed if you're playing two tight ends a lot. So obviously that's something that Tennessee hopes they can continue to do with the depth at tight end. Let's go to quarterback. Rob, obviously Nico, first-year starter, had some highs, had some lows, had a lot of learning experiences. I got better as the year progressed. I thought that he was a much better football player towards the end. Everybody knows he's got to take a step, okay? He's got to take a step. It's the nature of the beast. But you got Nico there, and you have a returning starting quarterback in the SEC. That's a good thing. Behind him, you got Jake Merklinger, who's had a year in the system. You add George McIntyre as an early enrollee. You know, nice little quarterback room, but obviously everybody's going to need all three of those guys to take a step this spring, not just Nico. Those backups have – got to take a step. Gaston Moore's not on this roster anymore. And
no gas pipe.
Yeah, no gas pipe. Obviously, he's a guy that could go in there and coast and kind of win you a game against Mississippi State. But those backups got to take a step as well.
Well, I mean, last year, or last couple of years, really, I mean, I guess it hasn't been an ideal situation at quarterback. And still maybe not with the youth. But you got three guys that, you know, you feel good about. You don't have anybody that you took just to take a guy. You know, to have a room. You got three scholarship quarterbacks that you recruited, you liked a lot coming out of high school. So, I mean, I think it has evolved to look like a SEC quarterback room now. And you're right. The biggest thing probably going on in that program right now, forget it, you can gnash your teeth over the transfers out or what they're getting out of the portal. The biggest deal is Nico going to take a step? And if he does, I mean, I think he can elevate everybody around him. And if he doesn't, it's, you know, it's going to be maybe a grind.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing with Nico from a take a step standpoint is just where's his leadership? Because, I mean, this is truly his offense. Whereas a year ago, I mean, last fall, you had Cooper Mays, you know, vocal guy who played a ton, who Nico admittedly was helping him with some things and was helping him as a leader with some stuff up front. And you had Dylan Sampson, who we all have seen, right? Austin, it's all the circle everybody up, and he's kind of the vocal one, and he's the rah-rah guy on pregame and all that stuff. I mean, right now, all eyes more than ever are focused on Nico. And it's not just to focus on him to say, how's the young guy going to play? It's now a focus on him on how's he going to run his offense? How's he going to lead his offense? Because this offense falls squarely on his shoulders from a leadership standpoint, in my opinion. I don't think there's anybody else out there to really compliment him or be the leader over him or have a big voice. I mean, to me, he is the voice of this offense. I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's what it feels like to me, Austin.
Yeah, I agree, and it should be that way. I mean, you know, he needs to want to be the guy that is in the middle of the huddle, you know, getting this team fired up. He needs to be that Drew Brees pregame speech guy that, you know, that we saw from Brees for years. Like, I mean, that I know that's not necessarily in his demeanor, but at some point you have to just say, okay, I'm just forcing this round peg into a square hole. I am going to be that guy because I have to be. And so, like, I think that you're right. The leadership part of this component, and then just, you know, how he, you know, processes it all. Like, I think, you know, his processing has to be faster in year two than it was this past year, you know, and everybody sees the flashes. When he flashes big. And so he's got to flash just more consistently, flash bigger a year from now. And if he does that, then, you know, it takes pressure off of all the other components, both on the offense and on the defense.
It's a really good point. I hadn't even thought about that in terms of leadership on that side of the football, you know, for next year. I mean, you'll have guys emerge. That happens every single year, and that's a good thing. But, you know, right now, yeah, there are no holdovers outside of your quarterback in terms of in that leadership spot. I mean, that's something to pay attention to this spring for sure.
A year ago, you had Brew.
Right.
You know, you had Cooper Mays. You had Dylan Sampson, three guys that were established at every level. And I don't even count the tight ends, where I think Stays and Kitzelman are older guys and could do it. That could just, on a whim, snap a finger, be, you know, the guy that everybody looks to. Like, who's that guy next year besides the quarterback?
Yeah, who's the alpha?
There's nobody at running back that makes me think, oh, yeah, he's going to do that. There's nobody at receiver that makes me think, oh, yeah, he's going to do that. Kitzelman maybe can help him. But on the offensive line, again, who would that be? And so it's got to be number 8.
Yeah, it's got to be for sure. Another set that he's got to take this spring. On that note, let's go to wide receiver. And that's, you know, wide receiver has been one of those big talking points this offseason. You've lost a lot. Graduation, you've lost Brew McCoy. You've lost Dante Thornton. To the transfer portal, you've lost Chaz Nimrod, Squirrel White, Caleb Webb. Nathan Leacock, Nate Spillman. You've lost a lot of numbers there. You brought in Amari Jefferson. You're adding Travis Smith and Rodarius Jackson and Joakim Dotson. Still need to add one or two before it's all said and done. Numbers-wise, I think if they add one more, then they're back to where they were numbers-wise for the 23 season. But nonetheless, Brent, that biggest question about this offense this spring is what does the wide receiver room look like? Guys got to step up. They got to find some rhythm there. And you know, we don't have those answers right now, obviously.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, you have no choice but to embrace youth. If you're a Tennessee coach, if you're an offensive coach, there is no, we're going to go out and get 12 portal guys to become a veteran offense all of a sudden. Like, you're going to be young at receiver. Even if you go get another guy, AP, you're still going to be young at receiver. Okay. I mean, So year two, Mike Matthews, what does he look like? Year two, Chris Brazel, what does he look like? Can you get Travis Smith on the field as a freshman? You know, what do those guys look like?
What do you have in Amari Jefferson?
Yeah, I mean, because the reality is there's no way to avoid being young, okay? It's just not going to happen. You're not going to line up with a bunch of guys where you go, I know that they know what they're supposed to do on every play, and they understand every choice route and everything we're doing and this, that, and the other. You got to get them ready. Okay. And so sometimes it's not the worst thing in the world, right? When you're forced to go that direction. we'll see how this coaching staff responds to it, because they're just going to be young. Do they have some talent? I believe they do have talent. I believe Mike Matthews can play. I think there's a reason why everybody wanted Amari Jefferson coming out of high school. Chris Brazel, I don't care what anybody says, Chris Brazel caught a bunch of balls and had a bunch of yards at Tulane. Like, it's there, okay? He didn't do it against just the Sisters of the Poor. It's like you got to get it out of them. And so I'm curious to see what that group looks like and what they get done over the next couple of months heading into spring practice. Because you don't have – you're not waiting on somebody to ride in on the white horse to save the day who's, you know, a super senior, who's an All-American that is a projected first-round draft pick, right? I mean, that's not what's going to happen here. So you got to go get those guys ready starting next week when they come to town.
And figuring out, like Austin said, what do you have in Amari Jefferson? You know, where can you place him? You know, these three incoming freshmen, you know, what – and Dotson's kind of a slot, but, you know, can anybody else play a slot? You know, do you look better in this system, you know, here or there? I mean, those are some questions you got to answer this offseason. I think Mike Matthews has got to be the alpha in that room, though, right? I mean, he's still a younger guy. He's going to be a sophomore. But talking about leadership and all that, now, obviously his skill set is, you know, the sky's the limit there. He's got to find some consistent production. But I think this has an opportunity to be Mike Matthews' room, right?
I think what's going to be – I don't think it's anybody's room for a while. I think the question is who can go out and be productive day in and day out and take the leadership reins from a work – just from their work ethic standpoint. I think it's a real mistake if you're a young guy and you walk into that room next week and you declare it yours. And not that Mike's going to do that. I think that one, unlike Nico, who should come in and have a team meeting next week with his offensive guys – I think that receiver room is – you got to earn your way in that by what you get done over the course of the next 2 or 3 months before you can become the alpha in that group. You know, I don't know who the alpha is going to be, but that has to be – to me, Austin and Rob, that has to be an earned spot more so than it is somebody just declaring that they're the guy because they're in their second year or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a vocal leader amongst that group. Like, you know, so I don't know if anybody can just, you know – production and all that, you could end up being Mike's room because he's, you know, arguably the most talented and explosive player in the room. But, you know, as far as like him, like, you know, being able to pull guys aside, I don't see that out of him. Just like I'm not sure I see it out of anybody in that room as of right now.
Well, and you don't have to be, Rob, if your quarterback's a really good player and your quarterback's a good leader. I don't think Cedric Tillman was the most vocal guy in 22 before he got hurt. I certainly don't think Ramel Keaton was that guy. Jalen Hyatt, that's not natural for him. The leader of that receiver group was a guy named Hendon Hooker. You know, much – I mean, good quarterbacks lead their receivers. And I think that's, again, why so many eyes are going to be on Nico and his leadership.
Yeah, man, I don't disagree. I mean, I don't think very often – I mean, you might have a wide receiver who's a complimentary leader on your offense, but, you know, by and large, it better in most cases be your quarterback.
Particularly if he's a returning starter.
Put an asterisk on it.
Go to the offensive line, much like receiver, a lot of questions about this group up front, losing Cooper Mays, losing your right tackles. You know, we'll see what's in store for Andre Carrick. You're losing Javonte Spraggins. The potential's there to lose 4 starters, okay, out of 5, bringing back Lance Hurd. You brought in 1 via the transfer portal in Wendell Moy. You're bringing in 1 that you think is going to play and a 5-star plus, David Sanders, if he continues to come along. Austin, a lot of questions, a lot of newness up front. But again, I feel like it's a group that, you know, push comes to shove. You got to decide to play some of these guys. I understand that. But there's a lot of options they like. But there's more to it than just liking them. They've got to move forward with them. And I think this year is obviously that year.
Forced change. And that's what it boils down to. I mean, like, you know, Cooper's eligibility is gone. Spraggins' eligibility is gone. We'll see about Andre. And then, so you're right. And, you know, they've got to push some of these young, talented guys to the field. And, you know, I think that's important for Glenn Ellerbe and his group. I think that it's important, you know, for him to show, hey, you know, this offense can still hum right along without Cooper Mays running it, you know. And, you know, without Javonte Spraggins and, you know, without, you know, being able to turn to Dane Davis in a pinch or an Ollie Lane in a pinch or whoever else, Jackson Lampley in a pinch, they've got forced change. And as Hub said, with the receivers, I would tell you that sometimes that's not a bad thing with the offensive line either.
Well, I just wonder if it doesn't, Rob, hyper-focus you as a coach. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying you get lazy as a coach by any means, but I mean, you go in, you put in a game plan, or you're looking at something every week, and you go, yeah, we can do this, we can do that, we can do this. We got Cooper, we can do that. He can handle all of this, everything else. And now all of a sudden, wait a minute, we've got to teach all this stuff, right? Yep. Like, I mean, there's some good to that, but there's also some bad to that. And there's a balance there. But I wonder how much it gets you more dialed in a little bit, but because I've got to get some young guys. There is no option of comfort at this point if I'm Glenn Ellerbe or some of these assistants.
I think you make a really good point, because I think it's human nature. I mean, I'm obviously not a coach. I think I would be the same way. It's just easy to get comfortable with veterans. It's easy to get comfortable with guys that, you know, that you have confidence that they know what they're going to do. And I think lazy is the wrong word. I don't think coaches are lazy when they do that. I just think they get comfortable, and it's tough to get out of that comfort zone and take
a risk. Rick's the same way with basketball, right?
Sure. I mean, it's the same way with any sport. I think coaches, you know, at the end of the day, they want to control what they can control. And, you know, having a guy go out there, he may not, you know, be a 99 on, you know, the talent percentile chart, but you know what he's going to do. And I just think coaches take a lot of comfort from that. And it's hard to bust out of that.
I mean, look, just 2 years ago, Rob, I mean, Zakai goes down, everybody leaves that team for dead. And yet there they were in the Sweet 16. I mean, like, I thought that was a fantastic coaching job, because you were forced to, you know, not rely on a, you know, the old steady point guard.
But this is not exactly a little apples and oranges, but it's a little bit. It's a little bit of the same thing when you're talking about, you know, playing youth, talking about this current roster. Rick has made some comments to me about, you'd like to have 13 guys, but the benefit of it is when you only have 9 dudes, everybody is locked in, because you don't have these 3 or 4 guys on the end of the bench who know they're not going to play and might goof off at practice. I mean, you got 9 guys you got just a few guys in the foxhole, and everybody's locked in on the same page. And, you know, again, it's not ideal. You wouldn't draw it up that way, but you know, it can bring out the best in coaches and players.
The flip side is every time somebody pulls a hangnail, you're freaking out, because it could be losing a guy too.
Well, I mean, but if you're an offensive lineman, how much different do you feel when you get into those February OTAs or whatever? I don't even know what we supposedly call them now, but when you have all these meetings you're allowed to have in February now. If you're an offensive lineman and you go into that room and there's not 4 guys in there that know the answer to every question, how much more are you paying attention as opposed to
– you got
to
step up your game.
You know, hey, I mean, he's going to play. He's got all the answers. Okay. All right. Yeah. Are they talking in a language that's over my head right now because they've got so much experience? I'm not going to make myself look foolish by not knowing the answer. I'm just going to kind of stay in the shadows and be a little more – reserved at this point. That's not the case now. Like, if you're Glenn Ellerbe, you're not teaching and you're not developing to a guy who started for 4 years. You're going back and you're developing and teaching to a guy who's played not a lot of football. So I think it's all different, and I don't know that that's necessarily the worst thing in the world at times. I'm not saying you wouldn't rather have an experienced line coming back for your quarterback, because you would, but now you got to go. Now you're really molding somebody, and let's see what that happens this spring with these guys. Let's see how much growth that they have. I think it's going to be intriguing to watch.
Yeah, the security blankets are gone. I mean, Dane Davis is pretty much a part-time starter this year, but think about him playing center last year. Think about Ollie Lane playing center last year. Think about Jerome Carvin playing center in 2021. I mean, again, like, all those, like, security blankets, options, you know, just at the center position are gone. Like, you got to find somebody new. Cooper Mays is gone. Like, you got to find somebody new. And real quick, how much did spring and fall camp, those young offensive linemen just getting beat up by that veteran defensive line, how much are those camp settings going to help this line now moving forward? I mean, you know, they've already learned a lot of harsh lessons. Now they got to, you know, step forward and do some of the beating themselves.
Well, we'll see. I mean, that's Glenn Ellerbe. That was his message last spring, right? About how much, you know, I know it's going to be hard for these guys, but they're going to be better for it at the end of spring practice. You just didn't see it because those guys didn't play. any kind of snaps other than mop-up duty at the end. So we're going to find out. I don't think we know the answer to that. You hope that it's a group of guys that learned a lot from, you know, young tackles and guards learned from going against the Eason's and the Omari Thomas's and Omar Norman Lights of the world. But, you know, I think time will tell. You would think a receiver is going to be better going against these corners, right? We're going to find out. I mean, that's what you're hoping is. You're hoping that you have great competition in spring practice that continues to help the development of guys, not only in spring, but throughout summer as well.
Taking a look at Tennessee's offensive side of the football heading into the spring semester with January classes beginning next Monday. We'll take a look at the defensive side of the football on Tuesday's podcast. We got the Mailbag podcast coming up later this week. We got basketball coverage Wednesday and Saturday. We got tons of recruiting coverage coming up this weekend and all the notes and information throughout the week on the General's Quarters baseball season. Just literally a month away. So how about that? Reigning national champions about to get back to work. All that and more right here at BallQuest.com. And couldn't do this podcast without our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been number one option in East Tennessee for roofing, siding, windows, garages, all that and more since 1999, 25 years. You can contact Exterior Home Solutions today, 865-524-5888, or visit them online at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com. For Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, I am Eric Kane. Thank you so much for joining us here on the BallQuest podcast.
You've been listening to the BallQuest podcast every week here on BallQuest.